This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Roger again. Good morning, sir. Have you been to Washington lately?
Washington, D.C.?
D.C.
Not in some years, sir. I think we were last there maybe about 5-6 years ago.
One thing I think you'd find so noticeable is all of the security precautions, even more so than probably 5 or 6 years ago, I would say. They've started to use dump trucks for this. And when we were out there this week, I was looking, and there was a whole line of dump trucks with snow plows on the front of it. And I thought, oh, no, you know, in around Chicago, you know, that means there's a big one coming.
Right.
There's snow coming in. No, they line them up around buildings to protect buildings. If there's a visiting dignitary or a facility that is especially sensitive that needs to be protected. And I think this started in New York, but I'm not sure. But they fill those dump trucks with sand, and then they'll park them end to end. There's just a little gap between the blade on the front of the dump truck and the back end of the truck in front of it. It's not enough room for an automobile to get through.
Right.
But that's a line of defense that they establish sometimes when there's a high risk individual, perhaps, I guess you would say, visiting dignitary in town.
Formidable protection there.
It is, and it's very obvious. And they're all new trucks. That's the other thing about it. At least they don't throw junk out there.
Yeah, right. Nothing rusted where the sand starts seeping through the sides.
Yeah, but when you look out there, you think, oh, no, you know, this reminds me of the, you know, the tollway system around Chicago. When there's even the hint, even the hint of snow, you'll see the trucks idling on the ramps at 2 o'clock
salt
in the morning.
Yep. I see him a lot on the outer drive, too. Always happens. City trucks there.
Yeah, we were there in a busy time, and we'll talk about what we were doing in Washington this week. Coming up here on the Saturday morning show, we'll hear an update on the headlines from you in a few minutes, sir.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
See you then.
Roger Battish in the WGN newsroom at 11 past 5. We're going to take a look at markets here to begin with. Corn futures down a fraction. They were down for the week. Corn futures are down to the lowest level in 2 weeks. South American pressure, that's part of it because of the harvest down there. And there's rain forecast over many areas of the Midwest this week. That should only enhance the moisture level for planting, which is coming up in not too many weeks. Corn closed down a half cent a bushel in the May contract to 356 and a quarter. July was down 3/4 to 363 and 3/4. New crop December corn slipped a half cent a bushel to 379 and a half. Soybeans, down to the lowest level in 4 months with the big South American crops coming in. There's one private estimate out of Brazil. Well, I'm not sure it originated out of Brazil, but there is an estimate on the crop down there that it's 111 million metric tons of soybeans. USDA is at only 108 on its estimate, at least at the moment. Soybeans in the May contract 15 and a quarter lower yesterday to 975 and 3/4. July beans down 15 and a quarter to 986 and a quarter. New crop November beans were down 14 and a quarter yesterday, down to 977 a bushel. Well, the grain analysts, the grain traders are looking ahead toward Friday, and I talked about it this week with Steve Georgi. Steve Georgi with Allendale Incorporated, and I said, yeah, those corn and soybean planting numbers, they call it the prospective plantings report. I said, I suppose, Steve, that will be the main attraction, won't it?
That's really what the primary focus is going to be. When you really get into it and you look at what the industry is expecting, And it is almost across the board. As you get more people releasing their findings, their numbers, their estimates, right around 90 million acres for corn is what the expectation is. Somewhere close to 88 million, a record for soybeans. I mean, that is a massive amount. Then the question will end up turning, what kind of yield are we going to be looking at? We're going to know the acres, but what kind of production numbers can we see? And that's when you look at people's balance sheets, they have everything across the board. Is this going to be bullish? Is it bearish? Where are we headed from here? We need to be very careful this time of year. Seems like the funds like to buy everything. But this report is going to be extremely important to see what kind of numbers we get as far as starting off for the new marketing season on new crop.
We have heard some soybean estimates as high as 90 million. Is that kind of an outlier there as far as the estimates are concerned?
You know, when you hear numbers like that, what happens is when you take the total acreage picture and you start dividing it up and trying to decide where things go, there's about this 3 million acres that is just, where did it go? So people, when you start hearing a lot of these bigger numbers, those 3 million acres, some of that's going back into CRP. Some of that's going into the other 25 category, the non-row crops. And so, you know, this is where price levels are right now. You do have guys pushing acreage, some of that fringe acres back into more of the CRP program. And so you can't expect to keep acreage continuing to grow like we've seen. And so, you know, I think realistic numbers when we look at 90 million acres for corn, 88 in the beans, I think these could be very realistic as we go forward.
I was talking with some growers this week, especially from the Eastern Corn Belt. They were from Indiana, Ohio, Eastern Illinois, and they said, you know what, we don't mess with ours much. We kind of keep a 50-50 balance. Where is it that the growers do tend to shift a little more?
You know, what we found out from our survey, and actually pretty amazing, is that when you look at the farmer that might be that 2,500-acre and less type producer, they do stick with their regular rotations. There is no messing around. This is what we've done. This is the way we're going to do it. But it is the larger producer. And that larger producer, as he's looking at his balance, as he's talking to his banker, and as they put together their marketing plan, they're profitable right now in beans. They're shifting to beans. And so it is the larger producer that will be shifting to beans this year. The smaller guy, probably going to end up seeing a lot of back and forth and a lot of regular rotation.
But did some of the bloom come off the attractiveness of beans in recent weeks with the prices slipping back down to where they've been?
You know, it has, but so has corn. So we got to remember that, too. The big thing in corn that you have to, after this report, no matter what the acreage says in this report, we cannot forget that there's 2.3 billion bushel carryout out there for corn. There's still massive piles that have to be moved. And so when we look at that in this, you know, the beans, a lot of the beans have been sold. But for corn, we still have some issues up front. And so that may try to keep price under pressure as we go into this April, May, and even into June. We need to get some kind of a summer rally in order to get corn prices to be more attractive again. And so has it taken a little off the beans? Yeah, it has. But moving forward, corn doesn't look so hot either. So a lot of struggles here ahead for corn yet.
What have the managed funds been doing with their positions in recent weeks? Am I correct that they have really lightened up their long positions?
You know, they certainly have. And basically, they have gotten back to neutral. And so just as the rest of the industry is scratching their heads, so is the funds. But we have to look at it in this sense. Last year at this time, after this report, the funds ended up taking a long position in beans. And why? And that's because of China's appetite for beans. Does South America have a record crop? Yes, they do. Did they plant more acres? Yes, they did. We're going to be planting more acres here as well. Yes. But the demand for soybeans right now is what's going to keep prices continuing to stay strong. After this report, funds ended up deciding to buy beans. And they bought beans because of the what if. What if we don't have a trend line yield this coming year? What if we don't have the beans or we start seeing some of them? They start looking at problems versus thinking the crop is just going to be exceptional. And so that for the next 3 months is where they start building a position. And I have a feeling that they may end up doing that again moving forward.
But let's assume for the sake of argument here for just a moment that a large acreage number comes in on soybeans. That would temper the enthusiasm, would it not, for beans?
It really will. But here's the other thing is that guys are already expecting that. We've already been talking about it, and yet we still struggle. New crop beans are still struggling around 10 bucks. Tell me why we're not near 9. We probably ought to be a lot lower than we currently are. But it is that unknown. It is the fact that the funds are still long beans. They have not let go, and we have been profitable. So we continue to export at a decent demand. So will we see that massive drop? I'm not sure. The entire industry says that we should. But yet we have to kind of question, why are we not there then? And so a little bit of caution after this report. We know what happened last year with the funds coming in, starting to build a position because of weather. maybe we might see that again. So we do need to be a little cautious on why we are not near $9 and we are still sitting near 10.
A lot of people here are thinking, wow, this is going to be such a market mover, such a big report. What is the possibility the thing could be just neutral? You look at the numbers and you say, okay, there's nothing new here.
You know, as far as the acreage side, that might be the case. We have another component that's going to be out next Friday as well, and that's the quarterly stock numbers. And if you can remember back a few years ago, it is that feed and residual category that is a huge unknown. And so when we look at these numbers, where could the biggest surprise be? It may not be acres because we may be talking about it already. It may already be in the market. But the thing that it could end up being a bigger market turner may end up being that quarterly stock number where maybe we've got usage that is more or even less. That number will have to be watched very closely. If we can get a surprise, I think it's mostly going to be on quarterly stocks. The acreage, we're already talking about it.
That seed and residual use number tends to be where they just they do the juggling, right? I mean, that's the one say, okay, well, we're not sure, but we've got this extra stuff. Let's just go for residual.
Well, that's exactly right. And then, you know, in the industry, we kind of laugh at it because that's what USDA has in their back pocket, you know, and what they want to do. But, you know, that category in itself has been just all over the board. There is no good way to track what that category may be on more of a weekly or monthly basis. And that's why it is such a drastic difference when they finally have to show their cards at the end of a quarter.
Knowing how critical the weather on into the middle part of July can be, and of course for soybeans on into August, what's the talk in your shop? How do you guys look at the summer weather right now and the way it appears it could affect the crop size ultimately?
You know, we've done a lot of conferences already and spoke with a lot of weather guys out there in the industry. And most of the guys are already saying that, hey, you know, we're going to just see a return back to trendline yields. There will be some problems in certain areas. You're going to see great crops in certain areas. We're going to return to trendline. But
so in other words, no fantastic yields, none that spike higher on the chart. Back down to what you're saying is trend line. That's not fantastic.
No, but you're not talking.
That's a concern to the grower if you've got low prices.
Potentially. I mean, what happened last year is we were talking this time of year of La Nina, right? We were going to get hot and dry and it was going to be terrible never to see rain again. We came in on June 18th that weekend and what happened through Iowa? We got rain and it continued to rain. So a lot of the forecasters were wrong last year. And so that unknown this year, guys are saying, hey, we're going to see trend line again. I don't know if that's just a safeguard that they're playing because they don't know. But I've already been getting emails talking about La Nina, a lighter La Nina back in the later part of the growing season. Guys are now starting to promote that a little bit. So those types of ideas, a normal crop doesn't get anybody excited. When you talk about fund money, as we had before, what it is, it's the fact of the unknown. And so as you start getting these guys talking about issues and problems, maybe it's too hot, too cold, too dry, too wet, too something, that is what affects these guys, and that's what drives the market volatility. And I suspect that we probably will see that again at some point and give some life back to these markets and give an opportunity for the farmers out there to really get some marketing done.
Steve, what about the outside markets? We've seen crude oil very tame, down under $50 a barrel. We've seen the stock market some days of late not exactly having a rip-roaring performance. A little bit of concern about whether or not the president's agenda will be achieved. Also, interest rates ticking up a little bit. Witness the fact that the Fed now has acted for the third time. Do these impact the picture? How do they impact the picture? One could imagine the dollar strength is a factor.
You know, yes, inflation always is something that we have to watch. And I think the Fed has already planned out. They're wanting to move rates three times this year. They've got that plan implemented. They're sticking to what they said. But I think the bigger issues that may affect commodities, the TPP, so the Trans-Partnership, how is that going to affect things? At first, it was going to be this chaos and well, we've never really seen that. NAFTA, redesigning it. How is that going to be moved? What steps has our president done to really anger some of these other countries? We really haven't seen any of our demand slow down yet. And so a lot of what was said before that these issues may become bigger issues as we move forward, we really haven't seen that. So when we talk about some of these outside influences like energy staying below $50 a barrel right now, We continue to see builds as far as crude oil. All of the products are still looking very good. All of this stuff kind of filters in, and it just shows that we really don't have a lot of uncertainty right now. What could happen with the stock market? What could end up happening with money flow? Because at this time of year, how many times have you heard guys talk about money flow? Well, here it is. That money right now is still going into stocks with this record run that we've been on. We haven't seen anything change. So everyone wants to talk about it, but yet it's been pretty calm for what has happened. So moving forward, though, yes, there is always something that's going to rock us off our rocker, and I'm not sure what that is yet.
Steve Georgi, Allendale and Incorporated, as we spoke this week, and I asked the special assistant to the president in Washington if he could put our minds at ease over that trade issue. I'll share his response coming up in the next half hour here on the Saturday Morning Show from WGN Radio. It'll be a week from today, actually. A week from today and also this coming Friday. It's 2 days. 400 tractors, antique tractors. And are they all restored? Well, most of them. And many of them superbly restored, but not all. Witness the fact that about a year and a half ago, they sold a... Well, totally unrestored. It was original condition, Farmall H, that brought $40,000. Yeah, it was a 65-year-old tractor, 70-year-old tractor, brought $40,000 because it had never been touched and because you had the right two guys sitting there who wanted it. So anyway, we'll look forward to being out there this coming week for handling the television broadcast of the Mecum Tractor Auction. Coming up in the second half hour, I will share some remarks from the special assistant to the president on agriculture. Even though the ag secretary isn't on duty, the assistant to the president on agriculture is. And I asked him about this trade matter. And I talked also with the president and CEO of the Grains Council about trade. He had an interesting trip. He had to go down and meet with the folks in Mexico to try to allay their fears. That's coming up after the news headlines. Sounds like we're not expecting any tornadic weather in our region, but I don't know. Did you hear the story the other day? We've started off worse than usual as far as tornadoes are concerned this
year. Yeah, I did hear that. The weather has just been, I'll use the scientific term, goofy. For the last month or so now, and I don't see it getting straightened out anytime soon.
Now, do you think you'd ever hear Tom Skilling use that? Well, you know,
never.
Max says, I checked the charts, it shows me it's goofy. No, I don't think
that's why he's him and I'm me.
We're getting some of this adiabatic heating in the atmosphere and the computer guidance. Oh, it's so much fun to imitate Tom. Love that guy.
He's great.
Well, we appreciate your duty, sir. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir. Again, pleasure talking to you. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you. Roger Badish in the WGN newsroom. Max Armstrong back with you on the Saturday Morning Show. Fresh from a few days in Washington this week. It was National Agriculture Day, and we were there for the observance on Tuesday of this week. And one of the people with whom I spoke as the special assistant to the president on agriculture, agriculture trade, and food assistance around the world. Ray Starling has that role. He's a native of North Carolina, a lawyer by training, grew up on a farm in North Carolina, not far from Fayetteville. And I said, you know, with all of this talk about trade and these trade agreements that we had being exploded by the new administration, I said, Ray, can you put our minds at ease a little bit over agriculture trade?
Yeah, I think putting your minds at ease may not be the best thing. I think we all should be paying attention. We all should be vocal, and we all should be active. So I think some of the angst and some of the enthusiasm and some of the desire to get to the table and be a part of the conversation is actually healthy. I will tell you that from inside the White House, nothing but good stuff about knowing that ag contributes to our lessening the trade deficit, if you will. And I think I can also say, I think the president's talked a lot about our manufacturing imbalance on trade, and so a lot of the conversation has focused on that. But that is not meant to neglect ag. That's essentially to say, hey, we know ag is doing a good job. We know we're making strides there. We need to make some more. Obviously, one of the quickest things that could happen there, which we don't necessarily want to happen, is the strength of the dollar could drop and allow us to export more, and our world demand could increase, which, of course, we see in the long term, but maybe given the size of world stocks right now, we don't know that we'll clear the backlog anytime soon. But with that said, I just want ag to understand you're going to have a seat at the table. You're going to be a part of these conversations. A lot of the accomplishments we had in prior trade agreements and in the agreements that were in the works are now going to become a bit of a baseline when we sit down and negotiate with our partners. They're going to make us work to get back to those points again. We recognize that. But in some cases, we think we could potentially even do better.
How important is it that we get the agriculture secretary on duty?
Obviously, the ag secretary weighing in across the agencies is very important. As I mentioned in my remarks, ag is generally not hounded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Ag's problems and challenges largely come from other agencies. I think this ag secretary, Governor Perdue, is going to be a person that will work with his colleagues across the cabinet to lessen some of that negative impact and negative influence on farmers. He's a farmer himself and understands some of those challenges. And so it can't happen soon enough. I know he is ready to be across the finish line. Those of us that look forward to working with him certainly are, and I know the president is.
You obviously have a great agriculture background. Your family remains in farming. It's a passion of yours.
Absolutely.
How confident are you you'll have the president's ear in speaking on behalf of farmers?
I think today we probably have the proof in the pudding. I mean, the fact that we were able to muscle through a proclamation that this president would present in the first 100 days of his administration that not only talks about the economic contributions that agriculture and farmers and ranchers make, but it also talks about the contribution to the social fabric of America. I think that's something that we do well in agriculture, and we need to talk about that. That's something that we bring to the table. I know my parents growing up on the farm, when I felt like I was very close to being able to lodge a child abuse complaint to them, they would always say back to me that, son, we're building character. And now I look back on that and I realize they are absolutely right. I learned a lot of character out in our tobacco fields and hog pens, and learning how to operate heavy equipment that's worth far much more than anything that I own today, dealing with commodities, dealing with people. All of those are traits that we should be proud of, that we help invest in rural America and in our children. And I was pleased the president acknowledged that in the proclamation as well.
Ray Starling, yeah, a little bit of a southern accent there, comes from that region around Autryville, North Carolina, where the family farm is. And the proclamation of which he spoke was a proclamation declaring Ag Day, National Agriculture Day. And there hadn't been one of those from the White House in 16 years. And Ray appeared at the Agriculture Day observance to present it in person. That trade business of which we spoke really is a concern to farmers. And Tom Slate is on the front line in having to listen to the overseas buyers in Mexico. Tom is president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. And they try to sell more of our corn, more of our grain sorghum into other markets, including the one just south of us. And he was just back from Mexico. I said, Tom, take off your flak jacket here and tell me, how did those discussions go?
Well, Max, it was pretty, it was a tough story. Our customers are not too happy right now. They're a little bit frosty. They've got some real concerns about their relationship with their long-term trading partners in the United States.
What can you tell them to allay their fears?
I think we tell them that, you know, this partnership is something we've been growing over decades, and it'll survive for decades beyond this, and that if we both concentrate on talking to people and reminding them how important this trade is, the trade that we've developed over these long-term partnerships, I think we'll be just fine.
How worried should we be, knowing that, yes, there is competition in the world, and I know you see it every day out there on the front line representing growers, but our proximity to Mexico is hard to ignore, is it not? And the ease of logistics of shipping into the market?
Yeah, Max, you're right. I mean, we've got a really strong logistic advantage right now. That's not going to disappear overnight. The thing that's troubling is that, you know, our long-term customers and partners, as I say, are looking Plan B, they call it. We hear Plan B all the time, you know, reducing their dependence on the U.S. for food and agricultural products, reducing their dependence in general. And that means they're looking at all other alternatives, both internally, maybe feeding expensive feed ingredient alternatives, or externally importing from other countries.
What about other customers around the world? When the president cut the legs off the Trans-Pacific Partnership, did that do irreparable damage with other countries we try to serve?
I think it changed the relationship. It changed the discussion. It certainly changed the discussion in Japan, our second largest corn market, you know, traditionally our largest corn market. Changed the discussion there about, you know, the bilateral talks versus multilateral. Changed the discussion, again, in terms of, you know, is the U.S. Really serious about these trade agreements or not? We keep hearing that here and there. I heard it in Korea overnight.
A very strong Trump supporter friend of mine who farms, corn and soybean producer in the Midwest, the other day said to me, hey, give this guy some time, for goodness sake. He said, here's the media trying to gin up this trade thing. He says, you see these Bloomberg stories and Reuters stories and are trying to get everybody excited. Give the guy some time. Well, how would you respond to that?
I think in part he's right, because right now we need to have agricultural officials at the table when they talk about these trade and economic discussions. Agriculture has been somewhat absent up to this point. Obviously, we're looking forward to having Sonny Perdue with his confirmations hearing later this week. The same thing goes for Ambassador Lighthizer, for U.S. Trade Representative. You know, those folks need to be part of this discussion. And, yeah, I think once they are, you know, trade will take its proper place. Our agricultural trade will take its proper place in the U.S. economic discussions.
Knowing what you know of Sonny Perdue, what you've heard about him, what we've seen of him as governor of the state of Georgia, do you think he'll be that kind of a spokesman for agriculture? Will he be forceful in carrying the story to the president and to the general public?
I think so, Max. I mean, we've worked with him before. We know he has a strong interest in agricultural trade. He certainly has a strong production agriculture background. We're actually looking forward to working with him.
Tom Slate visiting with me earlier this week in Washington. He's the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. Yeah, Sonny Perdue made his appearance before the Senate Agriculture Committee day before yesterday, and it was a love fest. I mean, when you look at everything that's happened with the other Trump appointees, the boycotts and the protests, oh, my goodness, they were Democrats and Republicans alike wrapping their arms around Sonny Perdue. It is representative, to be honest with you, of the bipartisan approach that has been there in the agriculture committees of the House and Senate historically through the years. And I've been wondering myself, with all of the rancor and all of the positioning that you see, especially from Senate and House leadership in Washington of both parties, if that bipartisanship would disappear. And it apparently hasn't yet. Chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, Pat Roberts, and the ranking minority member, Debbie Stabenow, were speaking there this week at the meeting I attended, and they said, we intend to pass a farm bill with that same bipartisan approach that we've had in the past. Sonny Perdue had his 14 grandkids there. and I think some of the members of the Senate invited him to come out and hunt with them in their states. So it was quite a friendly affair, again, as I said, compared to others. There's more coming up here on the Saturday Morning Show from WGN Radio, this portion of which brought to you by Wink Products Company. 9 minutes before 6 on WGN Radio, Max Armstrong with you on the Saturday Morning Show. Big O continues to recuperate from some leg surgery to improve his circulation. And when I talked to him the other day, that voice, that timbre in that voice was powerful. I know he's getting frustrated because they want him to rest and relax and to get recharged before he comes back to work. And that's not in his vocabulary, I don't think, resting anyway. Well, this week in Washington, D.C., on that Agriculture Day Tuesday, we visited with various folks from politics and from agribusiness, and I crossed paths with Amy Bradford, who's down in Bloomington. She's the corporate relations manager for the big farm cooperative GrowMark, and she serves on the board of the Agriculture Council of America, the organization that sponsors National Agriculture Day. I said, Amy, give us some background on this event that's gone on more than 40 years, and why is there Ag Day?
Well, I think it really is important for people to understand basically where their food comes from. And National Ag Day is just a celebration of the people that grow the food, and as well as the fiber that clothes people and the fuel that fuels people's vehicles. And I think it's really important that people in the industry come together as a common voice to be able to celebrate that and then to share with other people, non-farmers, the value of all of that.
It's an industry that works so well every day, we can take it for granted. That's remarkable, isn't it?
Well, and we often do take it for granted. I know that a lot of times I expect to go into the grocery store, and I've been in this business for 30-plus years. I go in the grocery store, and if they don't have something I want, I wonder why. And I do take for granted that the foods that I want, they're going to be there when I demand them. And farmers have a huge responsibility to fill. If you think about all of those people who go to the grocery store and want a certain thing at a certain time, they've got a big job, and we need to make sure that people understand how valuable that is to them.
Farmers and ranchers are concerned about many issues. They're concerned about misunderstandings of their industry, so much so that there are many who try to connect on the social media to advocate the story, if you will. Does Ag Day kind of fit into that, the National Agriculture Day observance?
Well, I think it does. And for people who were at the event this morning, they heard some younger people talking about using social media to tell the story of agriculture. A young woman talking about sharing her job on their hog farm and how they care for those pigs. And social media is a great way to connect with people. I think it gives us an opportunity to be transparent and authentic and really just show the human side of farmers and producing food.
Is there anything to fear about being transparent? Obviously, you know, producers are a little bit reluctant sometimes knowing that things can be misconstrued.
I think that concern is real. But I also think that those channels build trust if you really make a connection with people on the other side and continue to answer them honestly and politely and answer their questions and not shy away from them. I think that can build great relationships and great understanding.
One grower here on a panel talked about that personal contact, that one-to-one contact. He's winning him essentially one mind and a heart at a time. And it occurs to me that nobody's more passionate about their industry than the producers themselves.
Well, that's true. And I think if you look at the different generations, you know, the older farmers, that face-to-face contact, the younger generation are more on social, and they probably have a lot of relationships with people they've never met in person. And I know from my own experience, I have some friends that I was in a class on social media with. I've never met them, but they are valued friends to me. And I think that that's a lesson that we can learn in agriculture, too, that you can build those friendships, and you may not have ever meet them face-to-face, but they can trust you, and you can trust them, and you can share that story.
Would you say that the two methods, the social media approach versus the one-on-one contact, complement each other well?
Yeah, and I think they also go hand in hand. I think that the dependence on social media takes away a really valued, proven method of communication, and that's the face-to-face. And any opportunity that we get in agriculture to combine the two is really a winning situation for everybody involved.
Is the Ag Day observance one that can grow? I mean, should it be bigger than it is? And is there a way to do that if that's the channel that you folks desire?
Well, we would always like to see this grow. We think that there are many opportunities to invite constituent groups and people who have not really heard the ag story to participate in the celebration. One of the things that we're doing here today is inviting legislative staffers and to interact with the commodity groups and people with the Ag Day celebration to learn a little bit more about agriculture. So, yes, we would love to see this grow beyond what it is today.
One thing that occurs to you as you look at those staffers, they are millennials, many of them. Our cameraman Ryan Rue has spent a day on Capitol Hill, and that was his observation, how young those people are. But many of them are the gateway to the congressman or senator, are they not?
Oh, that is true. That is true. Those staffers are the ones who are taking the messages back to the senators and representatives and talking to them about what they learned from this group today, from this celebration. And they are also often the first point of contact if a constituent wants to get to their legislator. So it's really important that we build those relationships with these millennials and help them understand what agriculture is all about, and then build those relationships with the legislators as well.
Is that also the generation that has been more prone than any other? I'm asking you for a value judgment here, I realize, Amy, but is that the generation that maybe has been more prone to misunderstandings about modern agriculture and how we do what we do, simply because they're fresh out of the college campuses, and you know there's quite a bit of information thrown at them during those high school and college years.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about that because the millennials that I've been involved with, you get them on both sides. You have some that are really into believing everything that they read on social media, which is good and bad. I mean, we share our stories that way too. And then there are others who will really apply a critical mind to everything that they encounter, and they dig deep until they find the facts that resonate with them. So I think that we have opportunities with this group, this generation, to build that trust and to really help them understand from a first-person point of view, not academic and not necessarily just social media, but from taking them on farm tours, taking them to those places that demonstrate what agriculture is all about, and helping them see firsthand.
Amy Bradford, she's with the Growmark Cooperative, headquartered down in Bloomington, as we visited during the National Agriculture Day observance earlier this week. The morning show, we enjoy folks checking in from around the world. Lawrence listening in Queensland, Australia, and Heinrich and Anita in Belgium this morning. Well, I guess it's still morning there, barely. What do you know, Mike Steven? How have you been?
Hey, tell them to stay tuned. A lot more
absolutely
coming up.
Absolutely. They're way outside the loop, aren't
that's
they?
That's true. That's true. I'm doing great. You know, I've got child number two on the way. I don't know if I told you that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, I will. So we just found, you know, well, we found out a while ago, just announced it last week. So
very cool.
It's a little terrifying. But, yeah, it is very cool. It is very cool. We're super thrilled. And
you're a high-energy guy. You can handle it.
Oh, talk to me at, you know, like 2:30 in the morning when the baby's up. And oh, Max said I was high energy.
Just turn it over to her.
Yeah, right. That only goes so far.
Tell her Max authorized you to do that. That'll
Jenny,
really carry
you
the
rascal
weight.
Yeah. Max said it was okay. Well, hey, Max, always a pleasure to talk to you. And nice job again with the show this morning.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.